What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, what's happening, everybody? Joe here, 690 ADV, Radio 690 ADV. Today with Chip Monahan, we're going to get into some topics today, which is a lot of fun. It's going to be great for all you new riders out there. And basically the topic we're going to talk about today, new riders, small and tall, best starter dual sports. And we're going to get into that. We're going to tell you exactly what that means here in just about 1 second. Hey, what is up? What's going on, everybody? Joe here. We've got Chip on the line. We're fixing to plug him in here in about 2 seconds. And we're going to talk about new dual sports for the new riders and what's really good and basically how to get into this stuff. And if you're a little confused, but you don't really know what to get, hopefully this will clear up a lot of that stuff for you guys so that that way you can get in and get into this wonderful dual sport, riding to where you can get out and trail ride with your buddies, maybe do some commute ridings, meet up and do all these really cool and fantastic things that you're seeing on YouTube. And not only that, just in your local community. So we're going to bring Mr. Chip Monahan in. And we are going to get set to go. And welcome, Mr. Chip.
Hey, how are you?
We are good, man. We are good. I know the podcasting took a little bit to get back going, but you and I have been chatting back and forth trying to build a really good segment for the podcasting for all those writers that are out there to get them a little more information and maybe hopefully shortcut to a better path to get into the dual sport riding. Would you agree or disagree?
Let's get into it.
Yeah. I mean, the big thing is, that the title today is the new rider, small and tall. And I'd really like to get into what the small and tall means. And I think maybe you will, or at least you, I think you'll agree with me, because everybody comes in all shapes and sizes, from the really short riders, that's going to be the small, from like the little 4 foot petite girl, and I mean, I know, guys on the tall side are going to be like tall, you know what I'm saying?
Oh yeah.
So,
yeah, well, I have a couple, I know a guy with 6'7", 270s, beginner rider a couple of years ago. And he needed to start on a DR650, so big.
Yeah, in the DR650, and we'll probably talk about that bike as well. And, this isn't going to be any rhyme or reason, and we're not going to promote one bike over another bike, and we're not going to say that this bike is the best bike, and we're not going to sit there and say, oh, well, you know, go do this, or you're dumb, or any of that type of stuff. That's not what this is about. What this is to help maybe put you on the right path to go and find, you know, what you're looking for, you know, because maybe you don't know what you want. Maybe you just don't know. Maybe you are that 4 foot nine girl, you know, that really has just seen a few videos, and you want to get a motorcycle and you've never ridden before, but you're confused and you're scared and you don't know who to talk to. Well, you know what? You can talk to me and you can talk to Chip. So we're going to do our best to put you on it. So we're not going to say that the 250 is perfect for you. We're not going to say that the 650 is perfect for you. What we're going to say is we're going to well round this out and let you know the pros and some of the cons and maybe some of the benefits of each different CC. And we'll try to explain what CCs are if you don't know what that means, the displacements of how big the engine is, try to, you know, bring you into this a little bit at a time to where it's not too confusing.
So, you know, let me start with one of the smaller bikes that's out there. It's a Bull Sports, a Yamaha TW200.
Yeah. Oh yeah. It's a perfect bike.
You know, you see a lot of those on farm field. Guys ride their farm fields with them. They're short. They're got bigger, fatter tires.
Yeah. For dirt and sand and all that stuff.
Yep, everything here is going to be dependent upon the ride. I know out here in Nebraska, the farmers, sandy and stuff like that, they need those fatter wheels, you know, and sometimes they're a bigger guy getting going. A TW is a perfect beginner bike for that size and person in that environment.
There's tons of groups on Facebook with that talk about the TWs and all that stuff. Matter of fact, a good friend of mine, he just made a post today that he was meeting up, and it's kind of ironic that you mentioned that. And that's what he's doing. He went and took his mom's TW200. They call him T-Dubs, and he is in Talaringa, Texas, which is South Texas, down by Big Bend. And that's what they're doing today. They're meeting up with a bunch of TW200 guys, and they are trail riding all on TW200s. So they can do it just fine.
So, and I've also seen guys that have started out like these farmers. They really enjoy it, running around our fields. And then they eventually move up to me, maybe something like a DRZ 400.
Yeah.
And do a little more, get on their gravel roads and start doing a little more dual sporting from there, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And that's the whole thing is it's, you know, you don't have to start with a 200 or a 250. I mean, you can start with a 400 or a 650, but let's start from the bottom side, and let's maybe talk about the 250s, because they're probably the most common for new riders. Most new riders look at the 250s, and there's quite a few of them out there, from ones that are discontinued. You can't really, they're hard to find, but they are out there. You find everything, and it blows my mind. But from maybe that starting point, the 250s, you know, what would you say, Chip, that you're thinking like on the 250 range, what would be a really good starting point to get out there that they're not going to break the bank on, something that you can actually, that's really cost effective?
You know, everybody knows the big Japanese brands, the Kawasaki, the Honda, the Yamaha, and the Suzuki.
Right.
In that, you know, the Kawasaki has a KLX 250, great starter bike.
Yep.
If you're a little taller, there's a WR 250R. The Honda has the CRF 250L and the DRZ. Suzuki doesn't really have a 250 necessarily.
It's a 200.
They've got a 125, don't they?
No, they got a 200. It's a 200. DRZ 200.
200. That's right.
Yes, it's a 200. It's a 200. And it's really cheap, too. It's a very, even brand new, I want to say they're only like just a hair over $3,000.
Yeah, yeah. You know, and like you and I talked earlier that Kawasaki used to make a bike called a Sherpa.
Yes.
With a very low seat.
Yes.
Several years old, or difficult to find. One of the wives in our group recently got one, and she absolutely loves it. And she's very short, but she can ride it well. And then there's the Yamaha makes the 225.
The XT250. I've done a video on it.
And there's an older one, 225, I think. Those are older.
Yeah.
And you can pick these things up $2,000 or less sometimes, you know?
Yeah.
So those are all great bikes to start out with. And budget bikes, reliable. These things don't have a lot of issues. They can have a ton of miles on them, and you can get into the sport that way. And a lot of times I like to bring somebody with me. Well, not so much anymore, but when I first started buying bikes, I'd bring a person with or two with me that was real experienced with bikes.
Yeah.
And you know, and I have a lot of faith in people in general. Like, they're gonna, you know, most people are good people, going to do take care of you, do the right thing for you, you know.
Yeah.
Buy a decent bike. Not always, you know, but by bringing somebody who knows how to buy a bike with you, it's a great way to get into.
Yeah. Yeah. And the other thing is kind of, you know, seeing is and putting your hands on it and being up in front of it really kind of helps a lot. But, I've noticed with, you know, new riders and stuff, and I'm sure we're going to get plenty of, you know, seasoned riders that will listen to this podcast and they will be on there, and it may not be their thing, but the beauty part is that I really like to lean on the really good seasoned riders to chime in and kind of, you know, put an exclamation point on some of the things that we're talking about, because it sometimes can help, because it is intimidating with motorcycles. It's one of the weirdest things in the world. You know, I mean, you know, you can go out and you can be on a soccer field and never have kicked a soccer ball in your life. Somebody gets you out there. I mean, you watch, you just kick a ball, but when it's motorcycles, it's really weird. A lot of people get intimidated with the motorcycle world. And that's really what this is all about, is to, open up the book on it and really get, you know, the new rider that's out there, unafraid, you know, and be able to learn and get the information that they need. And that's kind of what this part is. And that's what we're going to promote this on, is the new Dual Sport and Adventure Riders page on Facebook, is to really help people out. And it's going to be a very slow process, but it is going to grow. It's going to grow. And this is going to be an information page for everybody. Post it, man, I'll comment. You want to email? I'll comment, man, whatever you need. I do it all the time. I've done thousands of emails for new riders that I just know they need a place to go. They need a place to go.
Yep. So, I mean, that WR is a little taller than some of these other bikes. Would you agree that Yamaha?
Yeah, the Yamaha WR250R is a really this is my personal opinion. You just sold yours. Kind of broke my heart a little bit. What a fantastic bike. It's so beautiful. And we're going to do a segment on that. And I've actually had people actually ask me about doing a segment with you on how to, because we did a podcast in the past. We didn't go into detail, but on how you find all those smoking deals and how that it can be done. It can be done. You can find great deals on these bikes, but that WR250R that you had, I think it's my opinion, it's the best. It's the absolute best of the 250 range. I think Yamaha nailed it. The emissions is what makes it so hard with these bikes. To give them all that extra pep and zep and all that type of stuff. They're not dirt bikes, you know, by any stretch of the imagination. You know, so you have to be able to make it work to where it's actually, it's not the dirt part. It's the street part is where they have the hardest thing, but it is a tall bike, but it is the best in my opinion.
I'm going to reel you back in. We said we weren't going to say anything was the best, remember?
Well, I'm just saying performance-wise, if you had
For the beginner rider here, it there's so many factors. It depends. You know, some people live in where it's really rocky and hilly, and they want a shorter bike, you know, and, you know, whether it's this or that, you know. I agree with you, though. I love the WR from a performance perspective, but any one of these bikes – you know, that old DRZ 200,
yeah,
that's a great beginner bike for somebody too.
Yeah.
You know,
it's inexpensive. It's short. Every one of them looks like a dirt bike. You know what I'm saying? So it's got the look, it's got that look you're going for. You know, some are going to have a little bit more power than others, but the other thing is, I think the biggest thing for me, and I think you would agree, is, you know, what feels right, what feels good for you. Because, you know, if I sit on my CRF 250L and then I come and sit on your WR 250R, they feel different. They really do. They feel different, you know, the way that they're built, the way that they're set up. You know, if you're a short rider with that WR, It might feel a little tippy just because you would be on your tippy toes because it's a tall bike.
Yep.
You know?
How about we go up from there? If we're moving up past the 250s, where do we go from there, you figure?
Man, you know, I'm thinking, you know, past the 250s, I mean, you just, there's not much out there to go off of. Now, if you're talking older bikes that you can try to get your hands on, there is an XR400. They did make it back in the day. They're really super hard to find. That is a really...
350 also.
What's that?
Is it Suzuki DR350?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like I said, yeah, they got the Suzuki DR350. So somewhere around that 400cc range, you know, I think that's where it is. But the one that's most common that everybody talks about, you already know as well as I do, is that DRZ, that 400.
Yeah, the Suzuki DRZ400. And they've been making those for years. And if for somebody who's got a little bit of experience, maybe on the street and things like that, and they're a better sized person, I think that's a better starter bike than a 250, any 250 out there probably.
Yeah, and I think
if they're coming from the road, maybe, you know, and they're 220 or above or so, and they're, you know, fairly small, that's probably a better starter bike than any of these 250s we discussed. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, 100%. And the reason being is because the that DRZ 400, it's crazy how well-rounded that bike is. It's not crazy on the power, but it's got enough power. Does that, you know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? And it's not super tall, but it's also not super short. Aftermarket parts. Holy crap, dude. Do they have aftermarket parts for that thing? You can turn that thing into anything you want to turn it into. You know, and the other thing is I'm sure it's something that we'll talk about here in a minute, is the outgrow factor. You never really outgrow that 400. You never really outgrow it.
You know, you and I have discussed, I think, in the past podcast that we love the WR and the DRZ. It's so versatile. And I've had three KLXs. I've had two WRs. My son and I have had a couple CRF 250s. I've had a DRZ. I've had KLRs. KLR, we'll talk more about what we've owned, and you've owned a lot of these also. You've got a 250 in your garage now, and you've had a couple KLRs, right?
Oh yeah, right? Yeah. I've had multiple KLRs.
And but that 400 right there is a great, again, all around budget bike. Couple $2,500 to $3,000, $3,500, you can buy a great one. Like you said, all kind of aftermarket stuff. They're super reliable.
Plenty of power for the highway too, if you want to travel on it. I mean, it's a lot of guys actually will get out and they circumnavigate the United States on them. I mean, they're very road worthy.
You know, you say that, it depends on the gearing. Right. We'll get into that. Let's explain that. But I can tell you, I'll explain that right now. I once bought, this was like 11 years ago. I once bought a, Honda 250X or something like that, you know, a trail bike.
Right.
But I didn't realize it probably had like a 54-inch sprocket in the rear and like a 12 up front. It was all torquey. It couldn't go past like 45 miles an hour. And I didn't like it. It was like I touched it and it would just pop a wheelie all the time. And I actually sold it just a few weeks after buying because I didn't realize I could change the gearing. I could change the sprocket and the chain on the bike and smooth it out and make it go 60, 70, 80 miles an hour.
Yeah. Let me slow you down for
made.
Yeah, let me slow you down for 1 second. If you would explain to the new rider that's out there, what and why they're called teeth on the sprocket. You have a small sprocket on the front that's attached to the motor. Then you have the larger sprocket on the back that has a lot more teeth. And why is it that if you change the rear sprocket or the front sprocket, how does that change the gearing so that they'll understand what that means? Because they may get a bike that they bought used, so the guy really wanted it geared low so he has that really nice, quick, instant power for off-road, but yet maybe you're not that guy. You want it to be right in the middle. You want to be able to do off-road, but you also want that highway. to where you can actually do some speed, to where you can actually don't feel like you're, you know, you're creeping on the highway if you're traveling.
You want me to explain that?
Yeah, yeah, explain it. That way they'll understand, like you're talking about, like a, you know, like a 15 tooth in the front, and then you have like a 51 tooth or a 48 tooth in the back. If you shift, go ahead.
Yeah, you know, it seems to me like, and I guess in the simplest terms, if I'm explaining to a new person, I can have the same 250 motorcycle, and I can make it go probably a maximum speed of 45 miles an hour. I can take that same bike and make a maximum speed of near 80 miles an hour, depending on how many teeth and are on each sprocket on the front and the rear, basically, okay?
Yeah.
They come stock with a certain setting, you know, a 14 in the front and a 47 in the back. My WR came stock with a 14 in the back, a 14 in the front, and a 43 in the rear.
Yeah.
And it went 85, 90 miles an hour. But when I was in the woods, I can't go that fast. So I bought a 43 for the back, and it made it, or excuse me, the opposite. I guess I bought a 47 maybe.
Yeah, you go and higher. You go higher for lower torque.
Yeah, so I could go better in the woods. All I'm saying is, as a beginner, you know, 9-10 years ago, I made the mistake of not realizing. I knew what bike I wanted. I watched all the reviews, but when I actually purchased it, I didn't realize the guy had it, you know, geared differently than I, you know, he must have been riding like single track trails going no more than, you know, 40 miles an hour, and I didn't like it. And then I went out and bought another bike just like it with the right gearing, and it was, if I'd just known better, you know.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, I guess this leads into a whole other path of, you know, how you can customize these bikes and make them, you can put lowering kits on them. You know, we mentioned the WR is a little bit taller. You can lower it. I've got a K690 with a lowering kit on it right now. You know.
Yeah. Kuba Link.
That's a whole topic, I guess. You know, but if you have a bike, you can customize it. You can put different handlebars on it, a little wider, a little taller. You can put burn risers on these seats. You can put, you know, softer seats on. You can put wider pegs.
A lot of them don't even come with windscreens. You can put a windscreen on it for traveling on the road so you don't get too much.
I guess sometimes I see these beginner people, they buy a bike and they realize, oh, this is, you know, I don't like it for this reason, but they don't understand you can fix these things.
Yeah.
Or modify it and customize it. And you do just a couple little tweaks and you're good to go. That might be a whole other podcast in itself right there, though.
Yeah, no, yeah. I mean, and that's the thing is there's so many, God, it's, I mean, you could just, I mean, you and I could sit here for five hours and still not even really scratch the surface on all the things that go along with this stuff. And a lot of it comes down to is it's not a question of if you can or cannot. What it comes down to is, I think the trick for you and I is, we want all the really cool, great stuff, but we don't want to break the bank to do it. So what we do is it's like a freaking task for us to find a way to get what we want and do it on a budget. You know, mm-hmm. That to me is the kicker. Is it's like, you know what I mean? If you just have more money than you give a crap, then I mean, you could just go get what you want and you can outfit it just as it's just super, super easy. But a lot of these riders just don't have the cash flow, and that's where the trick comes in, how to find the really good deals. I mean, and we'll talk about it. Probably won't be on this podcast, but there will be a podcast or podcasts to explain that, you know, you don't have to have, you know, $20,000 to get into this and have a good time, from jackets to boots to pants to tents to panniers to racks to skid plates, you know, to hammocks. I mean, God, the list goes on and on and on, from cooking. My God, I can do 5 podcasts just on cooking. You know, I mean, there's just so much stuff that's out there. So, but yeah, you're right. That's one of those big things is, you know, you may not like what you got right out of the gate, but you got a really good deal on that bike, man. You can tweak it. You can make it your own for sure.
Yeah. People, you know, I'll give you a super common thing all the time. A lot of times, even when people, I tend to buy everything used. I mean, I like buying, I think there's much more value in the used bike market, but these bikes, people tend to spend hundreds of dollars on extra parts and customized parts.
Right.
Like, it's still going to be worth $3,500 whether the parts are on there or not, you know. But tires are, and that's a whole other podcast also, but, you know, a lot of times people will, you know, they're more street-oriented tires, and you're going to do more dirt-oriented simply by putting knobby tires on. That's a customization. That's an example, you know. That's just one example for the new rider. There's so many other things you can do, but I guess getting back to the bikes, you know, what's the right bike for a certain size or person?
Yeah.
You know, I mentioned earlier, we got a guy in a group, and I'm in. He's like 6'7", 270. He started out as a brand new rider on a DR650. That was the right size bike for him.
Right.
Probably could have done it on a DRZ, but probably those 250s, none of those 250s would have worked for him, probably.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I know that, you know, I get asked all the times, like, hey, you know what? I was thinking about this bike. I'm 230 pounds, and would a 250 work for me? You know, I get that asked actually more often than you might think, because they think that they're, you know, a 250cc bike, that they are just a little too on the heavy side, a little too big or anything like that, that maybe they should just get a bigger bike. All right, well, here's the deal. I always try to tell people all the time. I said, motorcycles are really, it's a mindset kind of deal. You got to get your head wrapped around it on all facets. So not just from buying the bike to what you're going to ride on the bike. It's where you're going to go on the bike and what you plan to do on that bike while you're out traveling on that bike. All these different things. Can you do it on a 250? Yes. Do I recommend it? Probably not. Just because those 250s, A, you're just a little bit bigger guy. It's not that the bike can't handle you and it won't push you and it won't move you. It won't do all those things. It'll do all of that. It'll put you in the hospital if you want it to. I mean, it's just, that's just reality. So the reason I say, if that's all you can afford and it fits your budget, then yes, it'll work for you. Just understand that the problem is that when you go up in weight, as a person, your suspension is where you will have your biggest problem on a motorcycle. It's not the power of the motorcycle. The power is going to probably do just fine. But the suspension, like the CRF 250, it is a soft suspension motorcycle. So if you're, you know, if you're around that 220 or something like that, it's going to do probably just fine. But at the end of the day, it's, and I'm sure Chip would agree, you know, you can either A, redo your suspension, your rear monoshock, stiffen up the spring and stuff like that. That would be fine. Like I said, you could customize these things. So it's really all in what you want to do with these bikes. But if you're looking for something just right out of the gate and you're that 6'7" guy, or you're that, you know, 6'5" or 240, 250 or something like that, maybe just a little bit more CC bike, because you are bigger. It will, you know, the weight itself will help keep the bike in check a little bit, but the suspension is going to be better suited for heavier, you know, guy, because it's going to be set up for gear and luggage and all that other type of stuff, where the 250s are more weekend warrior type bikes, in my opinion.
Wouldn't Joe, I'm going to throw out a range. Tell me if you agree with this. Probably most of these bikes are probably set up for a person probably from 140 to maybe 180 pounds.
Spot on.
Would you agree with those numbers?
Yep. I would say under 200 pounds for sure, but I'd say somewhere around about that 180, no more than 190.
Yeah, I would agree. So if you're 190 pounds plus, you got gear on and you're, you know, 220, 225, 230, anything, you're definitely probably going to have your spring. Again, that's all customization and things like that, you know. If you're, and maybe you're buying a used bike and the guy was 230 pounds and it's got a stiffer spring on there, and you're 160, now you've got to bring that bike back to stock.
Yeah, you're going to have to make a few changes, you know, unless you're just planning on, you know, packing a lot of gear and traveling. So, I mean, I think it boils down to, you know, that's the thing. And that's what makes this so much fun is, you know, this is not a discouragement saying, okay, well, they might have done this or they might have done that. I mean, that's half the fun is, you know, I tell all these guys that, you know, tinkering with a bike is almost as much fun as riding the bike, because it's yours. Absolutely. It's yours, man. It's your bike. You know, that's what makes motorcycling and dual sport riding and adventure riding and whatever you want to do. I don't even care if you ride to the grocery store. If that's your thing, man, that's your adventure, bro. I don't care. I'm not that guy. Go, oh man, if you're not out thick in it, bro, you're not a rider. No, man, I don't give a crap. If you ride, you ride. That's it. I don't care if it's to the grocery store or if it's to school or if it's to ride over to your mom's house or your grandma's house. I don't care, man. If that's your thing, man, that's your thing. So, that's what makes this so special is you, it's you and your bike. It's nobody else. It's just you and your bike, man. And that's what makes it so amazing and special. And that's the appealing for it, to get into it is because it's you. There's nobody. It's when I'm riding down the road, if Chip was riding next to me, he's either on a bike or I don't see him. That's the way it works. He ain't riding on the back, man. He's not on the back of my bike. You know, he's not on there. He's not, you know, I'm doing it. It's my thing. It's my personal time. That's my personal space. That's my one thing, you know? So, but yeah, like you said, man, these bikes are really not set up for heavy set guys. You're going to have to, you know, make it your own, you know, if you are a heavy set guy. Not saying you can't do it, just saying you're just going to have to probably make a few changes. That's all. Mm-hmm.
Where would you see the a KLR being a beginner bike for somebody?
My personal opinion, the KLR 650, I think, is all the way around a fantastic bike. It'll do anything. It just won't do it great. For a new rider, I would say definitely probably a bigger guy. You know, that's my opinion, a bigger guy. They're kind of fat, bulky. They're not that they're that tall. The problem is the seats are so wide, right underneath the where the engine is, where it actually attaches to the gigantic gas station of a tank, because it's a 6.2-gallon tank. It's just wide. So if you're a short rider, you're definitely going to probably have to lower that bike a little bit, because you get your legs sprawl out a little. It's like riding a horse. That's the easiest way to explain it. It's like, you know, it's like seating a horse. You know, it's just your legs sprawl out a little bit. So you just, I got a funny story. I mean, I'm right at 6 feet tall, and I had a KLR, and, I was on a trip with one of my very good friends, Billy J. He's with Story Moto. If you've ever heard of him, you can follow him. You can find him on YouTube and Facebook. He's out there. But we pulled into Ouray, Colorado, and a bunch of DRZ guys were out there. They were all pulled up at the gas station. And I pulled in on my KLR. This was in 2012. And we were all packed up and everything, you know. So, and I mean, what I'm getting at is, I mean, I'm tall enough that I can almost touch flat footed. Well, I basically pulled in, and they hold so much fuel, they're top heavy. So I went to put my kickstand down, and I thought that I kicked it down. I've kicked it a million times, and I missed it, and I thought it was down because I felt it with my boot. And, well, needless to say, it didn't matter what I did. The bike completely laid on the ground. All these DRZ guys are laughing. And I just stepped off of the bike as it crashed onto the ground, walked into the grocery store, and like it was meant to be, because that's how the bike is. You know, you just beat the crap out of it. But the KLR, you know, getting to that aspect, is it's not a beautiful motorcycle. It looks like a gigantic dirt bike. I would say it's definitely set up for a new rider on a larger scaled person. That's my opinion.
I'll tell you, you know where I see new riders buy that? I see guys from the Harley world or big bike world.
Yes.
They want to get dual sport for their first dual sport, they're beginning dual sport riding, but they just can't bring themselves to buy a smaller CC bike, and they buy that big old KLR.
Yeah.
And, you know, they, if they're more road-oriented or super easy gravel road, it's probably a fine bike. But if they really want to get into the woods and stuff like that, they need to go smaller. That's sometimes where I see the mistake of the bike guy saying he's going to buy a dual sport and trying to get a bigger CC bike. That's what I see.
Yeah, you get a lot of those guys. They always go for they think because they ride the Harleys that are like, you know, 800-900 pounds, that they can just step onto, like, say, and you've owned one, a Triumph Tiger, just go zipping through the woods. That's not the case. I don't care how much you've ridden on the street. If you've never ridden off-road, that's a whole other aspect, and that's definitely going to be a podcast that we're going to talk about. It's going to be a whole segment, going from street to dirt. And there are and here's the kicker. On the highway, it's either asphalt or it's concrete. It's one or the other. It's either asphalt or it's concrete if you're actually riding for most of these street guys. You know what to expect. There's always going to be grip unless it's wet or it's cold. Man, I could do a whole podcast segment just on scree and gravel roads. They are all different. They are they react different from washboarding to, you know, potholing to off-road when you get to the dirt side. I don't want to get too deep into it because I definitely want to do a whole segment on that. Just because you can ride a motorcycle on the street don't mean crap. Understand that. Don't just think that you've been riding street for a long time and you're just going to go out and romp it up off-road. That's not going to happen. You're going to get yourself hurt, and it's not the smart thing to do.
You know, one thing we didn't, you know, we touched on, you know, the Japanese brands, but I've owned some KTMs and you own KTMs and stuff like that. There are, you know, if you've got the money and don't mind spending, you know, the money, the KTMs or the Huskies and those type of things are more high performance dual sport bikes, and they're obviously on the used market as well.
Yeah.
They typically are, you know, far more horsepower and far lighter. And as I've matured in this motorcycling world last, you know, 10, 11, 12 years, I've been riding again now after about almost a 20-year break. I had the Japanese bikes, and I've tended towards now the you know, Austrian bikes, or I did just buy a Beta also. But they're just lighter with more horsepower, you know.
Yeah.
So if you're going to get into it and you don't want to spend a little extra money, that's another good way to go also. I had my first KTM was a EXC 350. KTM EXC 350F, I guess what it's called.
Yeah, it's the four-stroke.
It was lightweight. I could go from trail to trail, jump on roads, this and that. It was way more than money than I ever wanted to spend. And I can remember for years thinking I would never, ever buy an orange KTM, never spend the money. But, you know, I'd been on a 250. I'd been on a 230. I'd been on a 250. I didn't want to go to a 450. I didn't want the weight of a 450. And that 350 was just right there in the middle, and it made sense for me. Yeah. I'm about 6'1", 195 pounds. That was a good deal. And then I went to, after owning that for 3.5 years, I went to a KTM EXC 500, and I also put a 690 as well.
Yeah. And that brings to a good point, you know, what you're saying is if you didn't pick up on that, you didn't start on a 690. You didn't start on a 350. You started on, I like to call it graduation, you know. Ride a bike to where you just feel so comfortable with it that maybe you're ready for the next level. You know, and just because you bought that bike, you know, and maybe you can't afford two motorcycles. Maybe you can't have three bikes. Maybe you can't have six bikes like Chip Monahan. But no, I'm just kidding. I'd love to hang out in your garage for a while. I see all those bikes lined up. You do videos of it. It's like, God dang it. I need to be there getting the keys to every one of them. But no, that's really kind of what it was, you know, set up as, is that, you know, everybody's got to start somewhere, and don't, you know, just because your friends that's been riding for 4 or 5 years and you're getting into it and he's got maybe a KTM 500 or a CRF 450L from Honda or one of these high performance bikes. I say it all the time in my videos. Those bikes really aren't, they're not really made for new riders. They're just not, you know, and I'm not saying you can't, I'm just saying it's just not a good idea. And the other thing is too, is you could start on a bike that's so far out of your league that it's going to ruin everything for you because, you either A, hurt yourself, or, It just scares the living crap out of you because it's got so much power that you don't know how to control it. It's like basically jumping on a cheetah versus, you know, riding a turtle. I mean, it's okay to ride a turtle. It really is, because, you know, you've got to earn your spurs, as they like to say in the Wild West, before you get out and do it. And, you know, start somewhere where you feel totally comfortable. And if you've got a buddy out there, and I know some guys are real weird about bikes and letting you ride and stuff like that, but if you go and, you know, maybe you check in your local area, you know, like of bike days, if you've got like a license, you don't know what you want, you know, Kawasaki hosts them, KTM does it, so does Honda, everybody does it, Yamaha, you know, or a buddy, you know, maybe you could get out and just, you know, go test ride a bike and just really kind of feel where it's at, you know, because I mean, I tell people all the time, people ask me, what is it like to ride the KTM 690? And I said, let me tell you what, it always brings a smile to my face. It has more power than I'm willing to wind it out and give it. But at the end of the day, I also know that I've been riding a long time and I do know how to ride. And I know for a fact that I would never, ever let my wife ride that bike because it would probably put her in the hospital. Just by whiskey throttling it and not knowing what to do, it could get out of hand in a hurry.
I'll tell you where I see these, where the KTM or Husky or something along that might, or Beta might come into play, is sometimes you got these guys that are, you know, they rode motocross for years in high school or in their early 20s. They got out of riding for maybe 10 years, but they know what they're doing. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And they're, you know, maybe have the money, they might want to go for that little high. They're not necessarily new to motorcycling at all. They've been motorcycle riding, but they're new to dual sport. That's where I've seen a guy get into an AXA 500 or something like that and do well, where they have some riding experience, but just not dual sport riding. They've been, you know, motocross riding for years and years and years, and are, you know, now they're 45 years old maybe and making a transition to the street. And they've been on high performance dirt bikes forever. You know, they're ready for high performance. You know, they're beginner or new to dual sporting, but not new to riding, kind of thing.
Right.
So they're, you know, I guess it depends on how we call beginner or new ride, new to dual sport, you know.
Yeah, no, exactly.
You know.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you get a, you'll get a lot of people. It's you and I have very similar stories. Rode as kids, got out for a while, got back in, here we are.
Let me just tell people again, and I've said this on the last podcast, I think, but I bought a Honda CRF 230F and rode it for about 2 years when my son was on a little 80 and 100.
Yeah.
Then I stepped up to a Yamaha WR250F, another trail bike. It had a headlight and tail light, but it wasn't street legal. Rode that for about 2 years, or 3 or 4 years almost, actually. So that, and then it was then that I bought the 350 and then the 500 and the 690, you know. But it's taken me 10 years to graduate and get there. So, you know, like you made the point earlier, you got to graduate and pay your dues, so to speak, you know.
Yeah,
along the way, with many other bikes, I've also, you know, I've had a lot of the bikes along the way as well, but
yeah, that's just the smart play. And a lot of people, like the CRF 230F, to the WR 250F, those are completely different motorcycles. Just to relay to people, if you don't know anything about motorcycles, the WR 250F is the actual enduro, that is basically built around the YZ platform. Okay. So which is a race bike. So, is it a race bike? No, it is not. It's actually geared a little bit different, but it's the same motor. It's the same chassis. It's the same frame. It's the same, basically almost everything, except for there are some mods from that 250F to the YZ 250F. So, but he didn't start on that. He started on a 230 and then moved up to that. And the thing is, you'd be like, well, why would you go from a 230 to a 250? Why wouldn't you just go bigger? Trust me. I've owned a WR 250F. And, plenty of power. It'll shake boogie. And especially in the trails, it's a lot of fun, but it's got a lot of power too, you know, for what it is. For a 250, it's got a lot of power.
You know, another thing I'll tell new riders and even existing riders, I just told him a WR today to this guy, you know, and I asked a fair price for it. He paid fair price for it. And he even knew, he said to me, it only had 2,100 miles on it, so it was really, really low miles. He said he even knew he could ride that thing for several years, put a bunch of miles on it, and pay for sell it for exactly what he paid for it.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
I mentioned earlier in the podcast, in another podcast, you know, you could take $3,000, you got it in the bank, buy the bike, put that $3,000 in the garage, ride it for 3 years, and sell for $3,000. It's just like, you know.
They're investments.
You know, fairly inexpensive. And then, but you do have to count, you know, you touched on earlier, when you buy the motorcycle, you have to budget for the gear. You got to be properly geared up with, you know, the right helmet, gloves, jacket, boots. That's a whole other podcast there, but yeah. You do have to kind of budget for those things. And again, I'm a big Facebook Marketplace used kind of, you know, I find great deals where if I'm buying a used motorcycle from somebody, I'll ask them, hey, are you getting out of the business? You know, I'll buy all your extra stuff or give me your extra oil and sprays and stuff like that. I'll take it all.
Right.
Because
a lot of guys, they'll actually outfit the bike with a bunch of new aftermarket stuff, you know, and really make it sweet. And what you get to pick it up because you're doing it. But guess what? All the stuff they had on there, they had to take it off. They don't throw it away. They just stick in a box or they'll do something. It's like me when I did my KTM. I mean, my seat, my tail end, my pegs. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. Skid plate, all that stuff. It was all on there. I mean, I sold it all off individually. I totally lost money on it. I just sold it because I didn't want it in my garage anymore. But it all comes off, and those guys don't throw that stuff away. So a lot of times, like you're saying, you can even get that along with it when you buy the bike.
Yeah. Well, you see it on, you know, people, why are you selling the motorcycle? Oh, I just don't have time to ride. Well, or I'm getting out of motorcycling. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Well, if you're over there buying it, well, they had gloves, they had a helmet, they had take it all in the deal.
Yeah. I mean, maybe it doesn't all fit you, but maybe some of it does. And if it does, then guess what? That's one piece of equipment that you don't have to buy.
Exactly.
Because jackets and boots, and I mean, that's, make no mistake, that stuff adds up. It really does. It adds up 100%. So I think right now, you know, and I'm going to go kind of slow on it, just so if there's people that are still listening to the podcast, in which there will be people that listen all the way to the end. I'm going to start at the around the 200cc and then go up to around the 650cc. Each individual bike that I may think or that you may think, you throw it out there as well. Just so this gives them maybe an idea to write down that, you know, if they're looking for a bike, because we didn't touch on all the bikes. We just threw a few of them out there. But these are the bikes I think the first ones we should probably do would be the ones that you can every day. These are the bikes that you can just find on Cycle Trader, Craigslist, at the dealership. You can find them on Facebook Marketplace, any of that type of stuff. You can get them on every day, you know. And then maybe we could touch on some discontinued bikes that they don't make anymore, but you want to keep your eyes out for them because they're bulletproof, they're fantastic, and usually you can pick them up for a smoking deal.
Okay, you start?
Yeah, I'll start with mine. I'll start with the first one only because I have it in my garage. You can get it anywhere. You can pick them up for a really smoking deal. They're totally perfect for new riders, really any rider, I think. You will have to probably make it your own, but for the most part, you know, girl riders, even guy riders, it doesn't matter. They're perfect for commuting. You can travel on them. Lots of aftermarket parts. The Honda CRF250L. I have one in my garage. I think it's fantastic. They also make it in a rally model as well. You can get those anywhere, and they're priced usually pretty good. You can find them on all platforms. Cycle Gear, Craigslist, Facebook Marketplace, Cycle Trader, pick it. And they're still selling them in the dealership.
Mm-hmm. You know, that Kawasaki KLX 250, I like that one. The newer ones are fuel-injected. I think they came out in, like, 14 or maybe or so.
Yes, yes. Got a buddy that's got one. He's got the digital camo one. It's really, really cool.
Yeah. You know, what I like about those bikes is they're 297 pounds, I think, weight-wise, whereas the CRF 250L that you have, I think, is like 225, so it's almost a 30-pound difference.
Yes.
And the Yamaha WR250R is 295. weight, which is 30 pounds different from the K. From
the CRF is 324. It's 324.
Okay, so nearly 30 pounds. That's,
yeah.
So that's a deal, but that for a smaller person, I like that KLX an awful lot, you know, and it's got six gears and it does business, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. No, that's a perfect bike. I've never owned a WR, so I'll let you kind of explain that bike to everybody, because you can definitely get those anywhere. I mean, they still sell them, you know.
Yeah, they've got a lot more horsepower than the Kawasaki and Honda. The suspensions, I think it's built for a little taller person. They like to rev real high. I think they're just a little more dirt oriented, maybe, than the other two we mentioned.
Yes, I would agree with that.
And here's the thing: people would adventurize these things. They'll put a larger gas tank, softer seat. They'll put pannier racks on. They'll take these over to the Trans-American Trail, which goes across the whole country from East Coast to West Coast.
Yep.
You know,
yep.
See things go around the world. And you see that bike more commonly ridden, you know, around the world or on really big, long adventure trips, more so than you do the Honda or the Kawasaki, I would say.
Oh, for sure. Definitely, 100%. So definitely 100%.
I just think it's a more serious motorcycle. They do cost a little bit more than the other two as well.
But I think you get what you pay for that bike. I really do.
It's probably my bike of choice. You know, and again, I'm also 6 foot one and 195 pounds, so I fit it on easily.
Yeah.
But I think that covers the common 250s, don't you think?
Yeah, the only other one that I would throw in there that I think is really perfect, especially for that super short rider that wants a bike that's light, got super smoke and turning radius. You could literally almost turn the bike around in a one-lane highway. You know, it's light. Doesn't have a ton of power, but will do the business for sure. It looks kind of cool. It's kind of fun. Is the XT250 and from Yamaha. I don't want that one to ever get left out. I did a video on it. I called it the little dual sport that can, because it can do anything, and it's super. It's like a banana seat. It literally slopes in by the tank. I literally bend my knees when I sit on it, and that bike is for anybody, especially any new rider. They're a lot of fun. They're not super expensive. You can find them just about anywhere, but that XT250 is a really fantastic motorcycle. I don't want to leave that one out just because I've ridden it and it's a great bike.
I think if you go a little bit older on that one, it's a 225 or something like that, right?
Yes, and they also made an XT350, but they were a European model. Every once in a while you can find one that snuck into the United States for sale, but they're pretty hard to find.
Yeah. All right, so going up from there, where do you want to go there? We kind of covered it. I think it's a DR.
Yeah, that's a, you know, in all honesty, I think, you know, that's, we would both agree that the DRZ 400 is just in that mid displacement, you know, between the 250 and the 650s. I just think that DRZ 400, man, you can't lose with that bike. I just truly think you can't lose with it.
Let me tell you a quick story on that. I went out to Moab, Utah, and I had my KTM and I had my DRZ with me. My buddy was riding it. My childhood buddy comes out on these big trips with me. I always have an extra bike for him. And that bike, we've taken out that we did all Moab with that bike, all slick rock, every big major trail, White Rim Trail. That bike did, you know. One of the other guys with us had a KLX 250.
Right.
I also did, you know, all of Colorado, you know, Imogene Pass, Cinnamon Pass, Alpine Loop, everything like that. I had the DRZ with me that year as well, the same one. I had it for about two years. I had that bike. It did all the business up there. And on that trip, this other guy, JD, had a WR250R on that trip. And that does it too. Now, I had an expensive KTM, probably two or three times the value of those bikes. But they do it, you know.
Yeah.
It's just crazy. Every major trip I ever go on, we go up to South Dakota all the time, and we ride the trails. The Black Hills are about 100 miles long and about 60 miles wide, and we put hundreds of miles of trail time up there. And there's always a 250 doing the same thing the expensive KTMs and Huskies and Betas and everything like that do. Maybe not quite as fast or as much power, but they're doing them.
I had
my WR up there. I had three bikes up there this year. I had a 690, a 500, and between the two of us, we had one extra bike, which was a WR. I took it up there as an extra bike. We ended up spending half the time on a bike because it was so comfy and so nice and flush.
Yeah.
And enough guts to do what we needed to do. So you can't overlook these things, even for experienced riders. You know, I know we're just talking about new riders on these, but.
Yeah, they're really for anybody.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
That's,
yeah.
You know.
We better not pigeonhole these as strictly new person bikes. You know, a lot of us love these that have been riding for years, you know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But they're great, I think, budget beginner bikes and stolen on good bikes.
Yeah, they're just, they're fantastic.
Yeah. So I think we covered, you know, in the 650 range, it's probably the Suzuki DR650 and the Kawasaki KLX or KLR 650.
Yeah, and then, you know, I mean, there's one we didn't really get into. It is a really tall bike. They are fun to ride. They'll do whatever you want them to do. You are going to have to make, if you really want to get out and travel on or anything like that, the XR650L is a great bike. It's a Honda. Everybody knows it's bulletproof. I've got tons of XR guys that follow the channel. They're really super cool guys. They swear by them. They love them. And they really are. They're super bulletproof. They're fantastic. But your most common are the two that we discussed. The DRZ650 and the KLR650. And the KLR650 is the granddaddy of them all, and that is the most common. You will see more KLR650s out west than you will see of any of the other bikes, 100%.
And it's also an around-the-world bike. You know, those guys adventurize those things. It's probably the most common around-the-world bike, don't you think?
Oh, 100%, 100%. And, I mean, the funny thing is I was part of that realm. There's tons of aftermarket parts for the KLR to completely adventurize it, make whatever you want, from panniers to racks, everything like that. But a lot of guys make their own stuff for the bike. It's kind of a fun thing to try to make your own gear and stuff. Man, I see them with military ammo cans for panniers on the back, you know, people making their own steel. Hell, I made my own. I made my own panniers. I couldn't afford them, you know, back in the day whenever I did them. Or more or less, I didn't want to pay what they wanted to charge for them. So we made our own, man, out of Pelican boxes, and I welded my own racks.
Yeah, the KLR I bought, the guy had welded up his own skid plate. It was bulky and good and fully protective, and it had highway pegs attached to it. It was great.
Yeah.
It was all homemade. And this guy, again, talking about the used market, the guy had put a ton of money into it. And I got such a great deal because he did all the aftermarket work on the bike, you know. You know, earlier in the conversation, you said half the fun is working on the bikes, you know.
Yeah.
I had a guy over here looking at my WR, bought a part or two off of it, you know, or some parts off of it. And I asked him, do you like working on the bikes as much as you ride? And he says, yeah, it's 50-50 for me, you know. I will tell you, you know, maybe that's the case for you. That is not the case for me, to be honest with you. I'm like 95% ride, 5% work on it. I don't want to work on it too much. You know what I'm saying?
I get it.
It's different. You know what I'm saying? I do like to buy a bike that is fully that's kind of somebody already did. You know?
Yeah.
They put the aftermarket parts I'm looking for on there. I don't want to have to be bolting stuff on and taking stuff off a lot. To be honest with you, I want to be able to clean it, wash it, keep it good looking, ride it, and ride it, put many many miles on it. But I don't want to be wrenching on it all the time. I don't mind doing the oil changes, the maintenance. You know,
yeah. Well, to me, I know what you're saying. To me, it's, you know, and that kind of gets a little construed a little bit that, you know, it's not so much the wrenching. It's sometimes just being out in, I call it the 690 Moto Garage, but sometimes I just sit out and I like to just look and think and just go, you know, what could I do to this bike to make it better than what it is? You know what I'm saying? Yeah, the 690 Motor Garage. You know, even my whole family, like, hey, I'm going out to the Motor Garage because I got a refrigerator out there. They like to go and steal my goods out of there, my goodies. But, yeah, I mean, I do like to tinker and wrench. I do get what you're saying. I do like to ride, too. I try to tell everybody, say, man, if I could ride as much that's in my brain as I want, it'd be every second of every day. But, you know, I got a company that I have to run. I mean, I do have a day job. But
I get it. I'm with you 100%, man. I mean, you're a lot closer to the riding than I am here. I mean, I literally got to drive to get to anywhere to go, like, ride, you know. Now, I do have trails and stuff around that I can do, but they're all shut down right now because of COVID, so I can't go and ride those right now. So we have Trophy Club Trails, which is literally right in my backyard. It's about 60 miles of single track, an MX track that's in there. They got everything that you can throw a stick at. You would think that I was out in freaking Arizona, but I can't go because it's shut down. So, but.
Well, I think we covered the, covered what we wanted to cover. Don't you think?
Yeah. I mean, in all honesty, I think that's really it. And I mean, if anybody has any questions or anything like that, don't forget, you know, 690ADV@gmail.com. You can hit me up anytime. Don't forget the YouTube channel, you know, youtube.com/690ADV. You know, Chip, if there's anything you want to ask him, you can either send it through me, unless Chip has an email that he wants to throw out there. I mean, we could put it on there, but for the most part, Chip's one of those guys, he just wants to talk about it. He doesn't mind answering the question, but
I'm not a big social media social presence guy.
Yeah, no, he doesn't live on Facebook and stuff, except for when he's riding. So and he does ride a lot. I mean, a lot. But yeah, today, man, I want to thank everybody that tuned in and is part of it. And if you are a new rider, don't forget, man, we're with you 100%. We're going to have a whole lot more different shows and a whole lot more different podcasts that are going to basically go down all roads, all facets, all everything, man. I mean, we're coming up on about an hour on this podcast, and that's, you know, we're just scratching the surface. You know, it goes up so much more than that. So if you have any questions, don't forget, email anytime. And I'll do the best I can to put you on the right track. And there's no right or wrong to any of this stuff. You know, there's no stupid questions. Just a lot of times you get stupid answers. But, but my thing is, you know, just be real careful if you're a new rider and some of the people that you talk to. Hopefully you've got a good friend. If not, you got good friends in us, and you can hit us up anytime and we'll put you on the right path. If I don't know the answer, I'll go to Chip. Chip don't know it. We got about 100 other guys that we can go to, and one way or another, we'll find a way to get you the right answer.
Yep.
So, well, all right, Mr. Chip, what are you going to do? You going to just sit around? Are you going to go out and toy with all your 8 motorcycles? You going to go make me salivate? Send me some photos.
We just got back from a ride yesterday. We went to a big ORV park out in Fort Dodge, Iowa, about 3 hours away. We had about 20 of us out there.
Yeah, it looked pretty good. I saw it on Facebook. I was like, God dang it.
We had riders from every skill level. We had several father-daughter teams, several father-son teams. My son came with me as well. He's 23. We had a great time. And then next weekend, we're heading another 3 hours south down to a place called School Creek or Milford Lake, just west of Manhattan, Kansas.
Right.
We're going down there. We got a group of probably 12 or 14 going down there next week. So
nice.
Yes, we're always riding.
Yeah, man. I'd say I need to move from Texas to Nebraska. Maybe I'd get a whole lot more riding in, but I don't know if I can move my company.
These two rides happen to be off-road rides. Typically, we're more dual-sport-oriented rides, but, several guys have multiple bikes, like myself, and we do some off-road stuff as well, so we're getting after it next weekend.
Yeah. No, it sounds pretty good. So I don't promote your channel because your channel is a private channel that needs to stay the way it is. But don't forget, new dual sport adventure riders. Check it out. Make sure you guys go sign up if you're a new rider and stuff. And like I said, it's a baby right now, but it is growing and it will grow. And it will have plenty of rider and plenty of rider information in there for anybody that wants to be part of it.
Right? What's that? Facebook page, new Facebook group, right?
Yeah, new Facebook group. I just think that it's good and it's needed, and this will be posted on there. Not only that, there'll be lots of videos. There'll be stuff, you know, for gear. I'm going to try to post, smoking deals for new riders and stuff to find on Amazon or on maybe Facebook Marketplace, you know, say, hey, you know, go grab it now. If you're looking, you know, I'm going to do whatever I can to help everybody out to try to make it grow as much as possible, because the more riders we get, the more cool stuff that we will get, from these manufacturers, which, is really the kind of the goal. But not only that, it'll change your life and it will, trust me, just ride for a little while. It'll change your life. It'll be fantastic. Well, Chip,
Alrighty, Joe, that's a wrap.
Yes, sir, that is a wrap. Everybody, I want to thank Mr. Chip Monahan for being part, and we're going to have a whole lot more segments. We're going to call it the Chip and Joe Show because he gets to ride more than I do, so I get to lean on him for my riding and stuff. So, but anyway, for all you guys out there, I'm 690 ADV. That's Mr. Chip Monahan. We appreciate you. You guys have a fantastic day. 690 out.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.